What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the program. It is episode 385 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. As always, you can listen to the program on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, and you can follow along on Facebook and X with our social pages for the latest updates. Good to be back this week. We got a lot on this week's episode. You know, all five teams. I think we got some news on all five teams. So, you know, all kinds of things. You know, Revolution opened up their season this past weekend. I got the Red Sox in full swing with spring training, with a couple games that they've played. Got some Celtics, got some Bruins, some Patriots stuff as well. So, I think we're really gonna want to get right into it. Before we do that, though, I want to say thanks to John Veneziano for coming back on Guest Friday last week. Great Revolution preview for the upcoming season. So if you have not listened to that, you can. Yeah, hopefully get some good insight as to this Revolution team this season that has gone through quite a bit of changes. So we will definitely get to the Revs later in the program. But I think it makes sense with the Red Sox beginning, you know, spring training games. Makes sense for us to start there. And, you know, obviously we started last week with the Bregman Endeavor stuff. You know, I think, as kind of I've said, is I'm not super concerned about it. You know, I think that at the end of the day that, you know, the team will be able to get both of them to, you know, do what's best for the team. You know, if Devers is going to DH, if he's going to stay at third, you know, what's going to happen? I think just at the end of the day, Alex Cora, I think we should have confidence in him that, you know, he and the coaching staff will work this out. And I think, you know, it's just going to be a non-story. I think at the end of the day, you know, I'm not overly concerned. You know, Devers, obviously, I think has had kind of a slower start to spring training, I think just with some of the off-season things that he's had to do. So, you know, Bregman obviously getting looks at third base, played really well in his spring training debut yesterday, went 3 for 3, homered, hit a double. So obviously early returns on that are great. And I think just the mere fact that, okay, you can look at a right-handed bat in this lineup that, you know, makes you feel a lot better about this team in terms of, you know, how the offseason went, that it was like, okay, they need a right-handed bat and they got it. And, you know, I think is going to make this lineup a lot more dangerous. And I think is going to help out guys like Trevor Story, Tristan Casas, you know, if they can stay healthy and kind of be like another guy that can hit for power, somebody that has a lot of success, you know, at Fenway. So it's not like you're going to have some of your guys last year being so relied upon for offense. And obviously, you know, those two guys didn't play a lot last season, you know, thanks to the injuries. But I think just having somebody like Bregman in the lineup is going to just make everybody around him better. I think just with his leadership, his hitting approach, you know, it's a lot similar to the signing of JD Martinez back in 2018. I think very similar type of player, I think, in terms of the way that they both approach hitting. And I think it's definitely going to, you know, rub off positively on this team. And I think hopefully you see some other guys, you know, take a step forward offensively. You know, even somebody like Seydon Rafaela, who, you know, I think is going to be playing a lot of regular center field. But I think the biggest thing for him is consistency offensively. So, you know, I think the good thing for him is, in particular, he's gotten a couple hits in the first couple of games, which is good to see. You know, I think oftentimes it's not really about, well, obviously it's not about, you know, team success in spring training, a lot more about guys' individual success. But I think especially, you know, in baseball, you definitely pay attention to the individual stats in spring training. Take it with a bit of a grain of salt, I think, either way, whether positive or negative. But I think good start for Rafael. I mean, I think that they are going to need him to be at least, you know, serviceable offensively. Not thinking that he's going to, you know, hit 270 or 280, but it's like he needs to be a guy that's going to need to be consistent enough with the bat so that he can stay in the lineup and not be in a situation where the Red Sox have to, send him down for some reason. So hoping that he gets off to, or he continues to get off to a good start. Bregman played yesterday. Story played yesterday. I think you're going to see a couple more regulars in the lineup today against the Yankees. That's a 4 o'clock start today. Garrett Crochet was outstanding yesterday. Struck out the side in the first inning. Also added another strikeout, so pitched an inning and two thirds. So really good first outing for him. Obviously, again, it's spring training, so you're going to take the outings and the statistics for, take them with a grain of salt. But I think really good to see him start in a positive way. So I think that that's definitely good. Tanner Houck, I believe, will pitch today. Cutter Crawford, it sounds like, dealing with some knee issues. So good possibility that he starts the season on the injured list. Obviously, I think a lot of us after the offseason should feel really good in terms of where the rotation depth is. Obviously, you'll have Lucas Giolito back. You'll have a couple of those, long relief kind of guys that can give you starts here and there. Richard Fitz, Cooper Criswell, Quinn Priester, who they traded for from the Pirates after last season. So, or I think it was some point last season. So, they'll have all kinds of options. Brian Bayo, I think, is working his way back after experiencing some arm soreness or shoulder soreness, but I think he will be getting back to throwing. So, Red Sox do seem pretty hopeful that he'll be able to start the season on time. And then there's the prospects. It's the younger guys. How do Christian Campbell and Marcelo Mayer do? What do you see from Roman Anthony? I think that you've seen a couple of starts from those guys, and it'll be interesting to see how they do in spring training. I think it was Anthony that played yesterday, I want to say. Yes, led off, was 1 for 3. Costas played yesterday. He was 0 for 3 with a couple strikeouts. Trevor Story went 1 for 3. Ref Snyder played, was 0 for 3. Rafaela 1 for 2. So he's had hits in the first two official spring training games. And then Crochet obviously pitched. Winkowski pitched yesterday. Greg Weissert pitched. Richard Fitz pitched. So, see a number of different guys pitching in different games. So Tanner Houck will go today. We'll start against the Yankees. And I think it was like Duran. I think Duran was among one of the guys, the one among one of the regulars that was going to play today. So that will be good to see him in his first spring training action. But I think it's a great feeling around this team, I think, in terms of positivity about where this team can go. Obviously, there's going to be people that I think make a bigger deal out of the Devers Bregman stuff than need to, but I think that at the end of the day, they will be able to do what's best for the team. Bregman, I don't have any worries about him. He's a guy that's a great leader and has been on a number of winning teams, so he understands what it's like to be on a winning team. Devers, I think, is a prideful guy, and I think it makes sense that he would react the way that he did, that he's not moving off third. But I think for this team to be the best defensively, he's probably going to need to DH. That's probably just how it's going to work, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see a little bit of kind of splitting between DH, third base, whatever, for Devers, because I think at the end of the day, he's going to realize what's best for the team. And I think, you should be confident that, Cora is going to be able to get that out of him, and they're not going to need to get into a situation where, Devers is refusing to play because he's there at spring training, his usual happy, smiling self. So it's not really like he's not showing up or, not trying or anything like that. I think that would kind of be concerning, but I don't think that we're seeing any of that happen right now. So I think, looking ahead, Red Sox with games every single day this week, got the Yankees today. They'll play Atlanta, Tampa Bay again, Detroit, Philadelphia, Minnesota, and then the Mets. So those are the seven games that they have this week. Obviously, the Yankees today, 4:05. Every other game, though, this week is at 1:05. I think a number of those games will be on NESN or will be available to watch somewhere. So I think for the Red Sox, that's probably going to do it. I think we'll, obviously keep you updated throughout camp in terms of spring training, the games that they play and things like that. So I think that's going to, yeah, I think that's going to probably do it. We're going to move on to talk some Celtics coming off a pretty impressive win over the Knicks yesterday. Came back from the All-Star break Thursday last week with a commanding win over the 76ers. So Celtics, I think, picking up right where they left off with their fifth straight win, ninth win in their last 10 games. And it does seem like the Celtics have, figured things out. I think especially after that, disappointing loss to the Mavericks a couple weeks ago, Celtics have come in with some dominant performances. Both those games against the Knicks, the Heat, and then obviously Sixers, Sixers and Spurs, not exactly cream of the crop of the league, but Celtics still coming in playing professionally, and I think not taking teams lightly, and I think that you started to see them kind of get back to being that dominant offensive team. And I think, it's good to see that the, shooting numbers, I think, have evened out a little bit more. I think they're missing a lot of shots, weeks and months ago when they were struggling in December and January. But, I think they've just continued to trust the process and trust themselves. I do think, as you've talked about, Jason Tatum has really started to up his level in terms of his offensive game. And I thought yesterday in particular just was great in terms of what he was able to do offensively, not settling for three-point shots, doing a lot of different types of things, affecting the game in different ways with, I think it was an assist shy of a triple-double yesterday after recording one last week. So I think just continues to play at a high level, and I think that the team kind of, in a way, goes how he goes if he's affecting the game in a number of different ways. And you could probably say the same about Derek White, and I also think that, he had a really strong game yesterday as well. But it just seemed like everything was flowing, everything was working. Now, obviously, the Celtics have taken advantage of, a bad Sixers team and then a, I think, a pretty poor defensive Knicks team, but I think it's still good to see them performing the way that they are. And I just, watch those games against the Knicks, and it just seems like the Celtics are, head and shoulders above them, that it doesn't seem like they have much problem matching up against that team, where it's just, interesting. Derek Welch and I talked about this a couple weeks ago on Guest Friday, that it seems like, the Knicks did all that work to bring in guys to better match up against the Celtics, and it almost seems like they have played worse against them than they did last season, because it almost is like the Celtics almost, it's almost seems like easy against them, that it's like the Celtics are able to move the ball, they're able to shoot the ball well. They've outscored the Knicks by 63 points, I think, in the three games that they've played. So really, whatever the Knicks are trying to do, isn't working. And the Celtics have, really torched them, I think, with their ball movement and their shot making, and just the way that they just seem to make the game look simple. And it's almost like that's what you expect them to play like at all times. You know why they're the defending champs, and you know why sometimes we get frustrated that they can't play like that all the time, because clearly they have the ability to. But I think just a really good, solid game. You know, sure, let go of the rope a little bit in the second half, but I think the great difference with this year's team and, you know, like last year's team, that they've done a better job when leads get cut down, and they do a good job of kind of staying poised, staying calm, making shots, and, you know, getting back into control. You know, the Celtics went up 27 points in the third quarter yesterday. You know, it looked like the game was going to be over, you know, and you start thinking about, you know, okay, our guy's going to be able to sit the entire fourth quarter. And, you know, here come the Knicks. They cut the lead to 7 before the end of the third quarter, or cut the lead to 7 at the end of the third quarter. Towns hits a 3, makes it a 4-point game. And you're kind of like, oh, okay, you know, this is going to be a close game now. And the Celtics did a great job of, you know, sticking with it. Derrick White makes a couple threes. They get a great Porzingis block on one end, Jaylen Brown layup on the other, and kind of, you know, put the game out of reach after that point. But I think it was just impressive to see the Knicks cut that lead down pretty quickly, and the Celtics to be like, okay, you know, we're not going to mess around with this game. We're going to take control back. And that's exactly what they did. So I think I should feel very good about the game yesterday. Obviously, the final score made it look closer than it was. But, you know, this is, again, supposedly a team that's supposed to make things difficult for the Celtics. And, you know, it's almost like hard for a lot of people to take any team in the Eastern Conference seriously, you know, other than the Cavaliers. And the Celtics have won 2 out of 3 against the Cavaliers, played them again on Friday. So I think that will be a really good test for this Celtics team to see where they're at. But, you know, 5 straight wins, as I said, the wins in 9 of their last 10 really seem like they're playing their best basketball of the season, even though they, you know, started the season 20-5. But I think just really impressed with Tatum, really impressed with Derek White's game yesterday. You know, and Porzingis continues to just be a problem for opposing defenses. You know, nothing more clear than, you know, I think it was in the fourth quarter, Celtics were in the middle of making that run that put the game away. And Porzingis just, you know, comes down the lane. I think it was on an inbounds pass. And Derek White, you know, throws it up alley-oop, easy dunk. And it's just like the Knicks are so worried about the other guys hurting them that here comes Porzingis. They miss him and he throws it down. So really good game for him. Jrue Holiday was good. Jaylen Brown was very good. You know, all starters scored in double figures. And it's just, you watch a game like that yesterday. And yes, even though the Knicks made a run in the third quarter, you're almost like, you know, is there a team in the Eastern Conference that can beat the Celtics when they're playing, you know, at that level? Now, I wouldn't say the bench had like a great game. You know, Peyton Pritchard was 1 for 5, but had a couple assists, had 4 rebounds. Sam Hauser had a couple threes. I did think Luke Kornet had a good game off the bench, cleaning up the glass a couple times. And, you know, I feel like I say this often about Luke Kornet on the podcast, but just been so impressed with his improvement as a player in the last couple of years, and really kind of becoming a solid rotation piece as a guy that just, as I've said, and I say this every time, that not the most athletic, not the fastest, you know, doesn't jump the highest, but is always in the right place at the right time. We saw that, you know, several times yesterday with cleaning up the glass, and, you know, had a couple of those rolls to the basket in that in that Sixers game. You know, took off from like 8 feet and threw it down. I thought that was pretty impressive, that play where Tatum found him driving to the basket. But I think just great to see somebody like that making an impact, not a star player, you know, not even like a, I don't know if I classify him as like a regular bench player, but he does often get into games, so maybe I would say that, but just really impressed with his game, with his ability to be in the right place at the right time, offensively and defensively too. Can challenge shots, can block shots, and I think is a very effective big for, somebody that I think you can have confidence in if, Al Horford does decide to hang it up sometime soon, that, Cornette's a guy that you can rely on. Obviously not much of an outside shooter, which is kind of the only kind of, I don't want to say down part of his game, but does really give you a lot in the interior, both offensively and defensively. So really impressed with Cornette yesterday. Celtics do have a busy week this week with, I believe, four games, couple against, or I would say most of them against some interesting opponents. They will travel to Toronto, take on the Raptors. Celtics actually were blown out the last time that they played in Toronto, so I think expect the Celtics to, rebound. That was about a month and a half ago. Celtics went to Toronto, lost 110 to 97. Toronto celebrated pretty hard after that win, so I wouldn't be surprised if the Celtics come in motivated. Then they have a back-to-back where they will play Detroit on Wednesday. Detroit's a hard-playing team. I think that actually should be an interesting game for the Celtics. Pistons may potentially be a first-round opponent. I really wouldn't be surprised. And then obviously the big one against the Cavaliers Friday at the Garden, and then they will also play the Nuggets at the Garden Sunday afternoon at Denver. Recently just won 9 in a row, lost on Saturday against the Lakers, but this will definitely be another good test for the Celtics, and that actually, those games against Cleveland and Denver kick off a 7-game homestand that will take them to the middle of March. So that will be, interesting. Interesting week of games for the Celtics. Toronto tomorrow night, Detroit Wednesday, Cleveland at the Garden on Friday night, and then Denver at the Garden Sunday afternoon. It's nice to get that Sunday afternoon 1 o'clock game. It's always nice when that happens with the NBA calendar, where the Celtics are starting to play those, Sunday games at 1 o'clock. I much prefer those to the 8:30 starts on Saturday night. Just something about getting the game done early so you can have more time to do stuff during the day. But a good win for the Celtics Sunday. Interesting to see how they bounce back, or not bounce back, how they do with a busier schedule this week. So I think that's going to do it for the Celtics. Going to move on, talk some Bruins, who returned from the Four Nations break Saturday against the Ducks, losing in overtime 3-2. Bruins made the comeback after falling behind 2-0 in the first period, getting goals from Elias Lindholm and Morgan Geekie. Geekie scored to tie the game with just over a minute left. It was a goal that they had to look at again to see if it was goalie interference, but the goal actually was overturned and stood. Or no, the goal was, I think they ruled it goalie interference, then they overturned it. Then the Bruins lose in overtime to the Ducks, a team that's actually been playing pretty well lately. I think they're near the bottom of the standings, but have been playing well lately. So, I think, again, as we've talked about with this Bruins team, it's hard for me to really find a lot of positives, and it's just, it seems like it's, that game Saturday, it was like almost a continuation of where things were when, we left off, that the Bruins, lose to the Golden Knights, lose to the Rangers after having third period leads. Obviously this game was different. The Bruins clawed their way back. Elias Lindholm gets the power play goal in the second period. Geekie gets the tying goal in the third period. But Leo Carlson and the Ducks getting the winning goal in overtime. And it just the issues that they had before this break are kind of the same issues, breakdowns on the first two goals for the Ducks. And it's a point in the year where points are at a premium, and you are fully engulfed in a playoff chase with all these other teams. And so, even dropping points, single points, is not good enough. And this is a team that, really is struggling. And I think, given some of the latest injury news, it's hard to maintain positivity in terms of, okay, this is a team that can definitely make a postseason run. I really think some of the comments that Don Sweeney made yesterday doesn't make it seem like this is a team that's willing to kind of like be aggressive at the trade deadline to try to push themselves into a playoff spot. They certainly could, but I think it's smart for them to kind of realize where they're at, and unfortunately, losing McAvoy to the injury sucks. It really is not great because, he's a guy that makes your whole team go. I think has been really good lately. Obviously, he was really good in the Four Nations tournament, but clearly suffered the injury and unfortunately, probably made it worse. But when guys are playing for their country, they're gonna want to play, and it's just something that you gotta live with. Now, is maybe there's some blame for the medical staff? I think that's possible. But it's just end of the day, he's not going to be available for what's, seems like it's going to be weeks. There's no timetable or anything, but it's just makes you concerned that he's going to miss significant time. Hampus Lindholm is now not expected to return for the rest of the season, which was kind of a surprise to me, but perhaps he had a setback. And the Bruins, don't really want to push a return on him, which, makes sense. He's a pretty important player for the team. So, I think just given where they are, doesn't make sense to push either of those guys. So, that being said, you look at their D-core, you got Zadorov and Peak basically as their first unit. And I don't know about you, I don't think either one of those guys are really good enough to be playing those kinds of minutes. And so just hard to expect that this is a team that's just going to magically start to play better, especially, missing somebody like McAvoy. It's not, I don't want to make it sound like there's no point to watching this team the rest of the season, that, in all likelihood, they're probably not going to make a big move at the trade deadline, and they're kind of just going to, wave the white flag, so to speak. And I think it would be good for them to look to move some guys that may not be part of their future going forward to try to, bring back some assets, whether it's, draft picks or a player with term. I'm not thinking that it's going to be, if they make a trade, it's going to be anything significant in terms of bringing somebody in. I think the biggest thing they could do is move somebody like a Trent Frederick or a Morgan Geekie, see if you can get some draft picks back, and then kind of go from there. But still think that there are reasons to follow this team. I think especially if they fall further out of the playoffs, obviously that's going to be tough, but maybe it opens the door for a Fabian Lysell, a Georgi Mrkulov to get opportunities down the stretch to show the team what they can do. I think that one of kind of the interesting things about the Lindholm injury that he's been out for a while is Michael Callahan and the amount of games that he's played. And I think that it's good for the Bruins to get a look at what he can do. And I do honestly think he's been pretty solid, getting to play minutes with Brandon Carlo. So I think there are positives to come out of this sort of stuff, but obviously you want the team to compete. At the end of the day, you want the team to compete. And it's odd. It's odd to be in this situation. This team has not really been in this situation for if you want to look back at 2007, maybe, because even the years that they missed the playoffs back in 2015, 2016, they went down to the last game of the regular season. So it's not like, they weren't in contention. This, I feel like, is going to be a little different because I don't anticipate that they're going to be, in the mix much longer. I think it's just at the end of the day, the losses that they have are going to be too great. And this is already a team that struggles to score, that still has defensive lapses, still is not great on special teams, still is maybe not getting the best goaltending in the world. And it's not to put it all on Swayman, but I don't think that he's been very good this season. I think that he's had some kind of, it's been kind of a roller coaster. He's had some stretches to good play, some stretches where it's just, not quite good enough. And so it's just, there just are so many things that tell you that, okay, this just isn't going to be the year. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just how it goes. And I also think, the Bruins have gone through years and years of being aggressive at this time of year at the trade deadline and have, gone all in, so to speak, and traded a lot of draft picks. But I think that they're getting to the point where they're realizing, okay, like, maybe so many years of wanting to be in it, is costing them. And so maybe it's just the time that they just take a step back and say, okay, we're going to try to see if we can, build for the future and build for next season. Because I do think that this is still a team that has good players on it. This is not a team that's just going to be terrible for the foreseeable future. Like, there still are elements to the team that work, but I think they're going to need to, be able to be, or they're going to need to be smart with this retool, rebuild, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's not a rebuild, but I think they're just going to have to make do with what they have. So, rest of the season, I'm expecting that the Bruins will probably go through stretches where, Pastrnak's scoring goals and playing well, and maybe they go through periods where they struggle, but it's just hard to find any kind of consistency with this team as they stand with 24 games to go with 61 points and kind of mired in the spot that they are, a couple games or a couple points out of a playoff spot. But the Eastern Conference playoff chase is pretty significant. So I think, it's looking like the Bruins need to, go on some kind of run, get a lot of help, but it just doesn't seem like this year is going to be the year. And I think it is comforting to know, at least, that I think the front, or Don Sweeney sees it that way, that it doesn't really make sense for them to push all their chips into the middle to make a playoff run, when in reality, like, you make the playoffs and you probably get stomped by the Capitals in the first round in 5 or 6 games. And it's just like, that doesn't really do much for, anybody, and obviously it's the playoffs. You never know what can happen. But I think for this team, it's just, you've seen enough through, 58 games that tells you that, okay, this is not a playoff team. This is not a team that, we should be kind of banking our hopes on. I think a lot of people would agree that, kind of taking a more cautious approach, this time of year around the trade deadline is, the smarter thing to do. And I would definitely agree. So, I think we'll see what happens the next couple of weeks. But, it's not all negative. Sure that there are going to be some positives and guys that perform and get opportunities, hopefully. But I think have to start seeing this team as what they are, which is a mediocre team that struggles to score and struggles to maintain consistency. It's just, you got to be realistic at a certain point. It can't just be, oh, we keep hoping for them to rattle off 8 straight wins and get into the playoff picture. Bruins are pretty busy this week. They'll host Toronto tomorrow night, and then they'll host the Islanders Thursday, and then the Bruins will have a weekend road trip in Pittsburgh Saturday afternoon, and then Minnesota on Sunday afternoon. And then they'll have two games left before the trade deadline, which is March 7th. Probably will do some kind of episode for that around the trade deadline, kind of tossing around doing a like a live trade deadline kind of thing. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, Bruins, four games this week, pretty busy. So I think that's going to do it for the Bruins. We are going to talk some Four Nations later in the program, so want to not forget that. The only other Bruins item actually was that the Bruins, I think, are having discussions with Brad Marchand for an extension. So I believe that that was the case, that they've had conversations with him. So in all likelihood, I think he stays here. I don't think that he's going to get traded. I know that there's been some speculation that maybe he get moved, but I'd be very, very surprised. So doesn't seem like the team is going to be, entertaining that kind of option, but I guess you never know. But it does seem like he expects to stay around for the time being and hopefully for the rest of his career. So now we're going to talk some Revolution. They open their season Saturday night in Nashville to a 0-0 draw with Nashville SC. Not a lot going on in this game, only five shots on goal for the game. Revolution with two. A lot more action in the second half of this game for the Revolution, as they got, some chances here and there. It did seem like they were on the defensive a lot in the second half. But, Ivicic and the defense stood up, and I thought stood up well. That was something that John Veneziano and I talked about last week, that that's kind of the spot that the Revolution struggled in last season, that there were a lot of struggles defensively. And, they brought in the two center backs and Ceballos and Fofana, and I thought that they played pretty well. I thought that, sure, Columbus, or excuse me, Nashville, had a lot of looks, had a lot of chances, but, Ivicic made a number of saves. There was a disallowed goal, I think on an offside. But I think for the most part, the Revs were pretty solid defensively. It is difficult. I think first game, you don't expect that there's going to be a lot, that guys are still kind of working through stuff in terms of, getting into a rhythm offensively. So Leo Campana and Carlos Hill were the two attacking forwards. Revolution only had a couple shots on goal, but I did think Ivicic had some good saves. Revs, I think, played pretty well defensively, so 0-0 the final. A lot of new guys in the lineup for the Revolution. I actually was texting John during the game, and looking at that lineup, there were only four players in the starting lineup that appeared for the Revolution in the game last season. It was Ivicic, Brandon Bae, Carlos Hill, and Luca Langone, and that was it. Every other guy was new. Had a couple of returning guys in the bench, and Panayiotou, Noel Buck, and Andrew Farrell. Good Andrew Farrell still with the team. I've always liked, his leadership on this team. So, good that they've been able to keep him around. But, definitely it's going to be a different team this year. A lot of new guys. I think a lot of, different things for them to work out. But good for the Revolution that they could get a road point, always good when you can do that. So, not much going on in this game, but they didn't concede. Starting the season with a draw is not the worst thing in the world. So, Revs will open their home account this weekend, Saturday night against Columbus. 7:30 starts for the Revs. We'll see if they can get their first win of the season against the Columbus Crew. So I think it's probably going to do it for the Revs. Just some Patriots items that I did want to get to. Or an item. The scouting combine is this weekend. It starts Thursday and then goes until Sunday. So we'll have the Patriots undoubtedly watching a couple of different players work out. I think, as you talked about kind of the draft, it'll be interesting to see what the Patriots do. There was an article that Mike Reese had written yesterday about the Patriots' possibility of looking at Lucas Graham, who's a defensive lineman for the University of Michigan, defensive tackle, and had a really good season this past year. And so it makes you wonder if the Patriots would consider somebody like him. I think just based on the fact that, we're not sure about Christian Barmore's, health going forward. And do the Patriots think about bringing somebody like Lucas Graham in to, play alongside Barmore or potentially to kind of be a replacement? I hate to use that word, but it is hard to know with his, health in terms of how available he's really going to be. But you do know with Mike Vrabel and the way that, he's built his rosters, that really likes building out from the trenches. And I think brought in somebody like Lucas Graham at number four, gives you a lot of flexibility, inside, especially if Barmore's going to be able to be healthy at some point. But a lot of options, I think, at number four. I think personally for me, if Abdul Carter is there at number four, they cannot pass that up. I think he would instantly upgrade the pass rush. And I think out of all the prospects in this draft, I think he's going to be the guy that's going to be the most, pro ready. And I would say that over the quarterbacks, Travis Hunter, I think he would be the most pro ready guy that could come in and be an impact player right away. I do think Hunter could possibly be a fit here. It'd be interesting to see, not just from a Patriots perspective, but an NFL perspective. Does he stick at one position? Is he going to be able to play both? How feasible is that? So, I think he could be a possibility. Will Campbell, Kelvin Banks could be possibilities as offensive linemen. At number four, Will Johnson is a cornerback that I really like, so could see the Patriots going there. I do think that there is a possibility if a Shedeur Sanders or a Cam Ward falls, further than number three. Do the Patriots, are they in a position to, trade with a team that wants a quarterback? So, all kinds of opportunities for the Patriots to bring in a talented player, maybe trade back. But scouting combine this week will be interesting to watch. I think defensive linemen and linebackers work out on Thursday. So if you want to catch Lucas Graham or Abdul Carter, that's, I think, will be your opportunity to do that. So I think that's going to do it for the local teams. I'm going to move on and talk some NHL. We're going to get to the Four Nations. Obviously, the championship was last Thursday. Team Canada beating Team USA 3-2 in overtime. Quite a game. I thought that going into that game, I thought that the US was going to be hard pressed to beat Canada twice in a tournament like this, so wasn't terribly surprised that Team Canada won. Of course, McDavid has to be the guy that scores the winning goal. Auston Matthews kind of loses track of him in this slot, and there's McDavid for the winning goal. So obviously, I think a great tournament, a lot of excitement, a lot of great, hockey played between Team USA and Canada, which I think was a lot of what we were looking forward to. So two outstanding games, just a lot of fun. And I think definitely Team USA will be out for revenge in the Olympics next year. So definitely just a really successful tournament, a lot of fun. But yeah, congratulations to Team Canada. So taking a look at some more NHL notes, Alex Ovechkin, recording a hat trick yesterday, is now 13 goals shy of the NHL record for goals in a career. So that will definitely be something to watch. There have been games the last 2 days in the NHL Saturday and Sunday. And I'll take a look. I think there are two games on the schedule tonight. Have San Jose and Winnipeg, 7:30 start, and then Vegas and LA, a 10:30 start. So we'll take a quick look at the standings. Not much has changed in the last 2 days, but we'll give you a quick look. Toronto, Florida, Tampa Bay, top three in the Atlantic, Washington, Carolina, and New Jersey, top three in the Metro, and then in the wild card spots, you have Detroit and Ottawa. Columbus, even with Ottawa in points, and the Bruins are 1 point back of the Senators for that final playoff spot. In the Western Conference, top three in the Central, you have Winnipeg, Dallas, and Minnesota. In the Pacific, you have Vegas, Edmonton, and LA, and then the wild card spots, you have Colorado and Vancouver, with Calgary just a point back of that final playoff spot. Now we'll get to the NBA. So everybody's back from the All-Star break. The 76ers and Joel Embiid are exploring options for his knee. So believe that he'll need another surgery. The Golden State Warriors yesterday retiring Andre Iguodala's number 9. And Greg Popovich is not expected to return this season for the Spurs after he had suffered a mild stroke in November. So we'll take a look at the NBA schedule tonight. Got a bunch of games, 7 o'clock starts between the Clippers and the Pistons, the Nuggets and the Pacers, the Bulls and the Sixers, Nets and the Wizards, 7:30 Miami and Atlanta, 8 o'clock on NBA TV, Minnesota and Oklahoma City, 9 o'clock Portland and Utah, and 10 o'clock Charlotte and Sacramento. So now we'll take a look at the standings here. Cavaliers, 6 games clear of the Celtics for first place in the East, and then followed by the Knicks, the Pacers, the Bucks, and the Pistons, who have won 6 straight. Celtics will play the Pistons in Detroit on Wednesday. In the play-in spots, you have the Magic, the Heat, the Hawks, and the Bulls, and the Nets are a half game back of that final play-in spot. In the Western Conference, Oklahoma City has widened their lead to 9.5 games over Memphis and Denver. Lakers are in fourth, followed by the Rockets and the Clippers. And then in the play-in spots, you have Minnesota, Dallas, Golden State, and Sacramento, with the Suns just a game and a half back. So I think next, take a look. Some baseball notes. Obviously, the Red Sox getting a home run from Alex Bregman in his spring debut. The Brewers are signing Manuel Margot to a minor league deal. And the Rangers are signing Kevin Pillar to their roster. So spring training games in full swing. Red Sox and Yankees will match up today at 4 o'clock. And then in the NFL, a couple news items here. The Panthers are not going to be re-signing Shaq Thompson. Shedeur Sanders will not be among the quarterbacks that work out at the combine. Keanu Neal is retiring after 8 seasons in the NFL. And the Bears are releasing a couple players, including Gerald Everett, to save cap space. And the Patriots also, I think it was last week, re-signed a couple of offensive linemen, Demontre Jacobs and Ben Brown, both joined the team at points last season. So good to have some offensive line depth. So, we'll see where those guys factor in. But I do think offensive line, to kind of return back to the Patriots could be a place in free agency that the Patriots look, not just in the draft. I wouldn't be surprised if they took a high pick, first or second round, on an offensive lineman, and then maybe sign somebody. I really wouldn't be surprised if they tried to beef up the offensive line. So I think that's going to do it for the sports this week. We do have a new top five this week. It is sports related, but got a great suggestion from Chris Burns, friend of the program. He's been on a number of times and gave me some inspiration for this week's top five. So we were talking about, sports days, so days in sports that are significant, whether it's, the day of a certain event, a weekend of a certain event. So we talked about our favorite days on the sports calendars. So obviously that inspired me to look at a list of my favorite sports days throughout the year. And so I figured it would be a good top five. So this will be specific days or specific weekends in sports that I think are the best, may revolve around a specific event or events, or if it's a weekend of events. So I think you'll understand where I'm going. So top five sports days. So start with number five. I figured that thinking about NFL playoffs, I thought about the playoff days for different sports, start of the NBA playoffs, start of the Stanley Cup playoffs, or finals, or for football, maybe the Super Bowl. I think for me, for football, I think it made sense to highlight the divisional weekend because I think obviously the four games, there's sometimes I feel like with the championship games, you oftentimes will get one game that's good, one game that's not, or one game that's close, one game that's not. I think sometimes you've gotten two good games, but I feel like that's rare. And I just feel like divisional weekend, you get the teams that are supposed to be there. Maybe you get an upset or two in the wild card round, but I do think recently with the NFL playoffs, you kind of know that there are going to be good teams in the divisional round. You usually get the best games. Wild card round, I feel like you don't really get good games. You might get one or two, but it's like you think about there's some mismatches usually, 2 versus 7, and those games are, often not competitive. But I think divisional weekend, you get the best chance of the most competitive football. And I think that's good enough for me to put it top five. Number four is another specific day on the sports calendar, Selection Sunday. For the men's March Madness is always an exciting day because you get to have the brackets revealed where teams end up, and you also get some championship games that are played on that day as well. So it's always interesting to see teams that play, win their conference championship, and then they're, somewhere watching the selection show. So I think that's always a highlight for me during the sports year. So I think that's a good number four. Number three, again, kind of league specific here, but NBA Christmas is always really fun. It's great to see when the Celtics are involved, when they're playing the Lakers or somebody else that's good. I almost feel like you're always getting good games on NBA Christmas, and it's, getting to see the superstars play, or, probably have spent the morning opening up presents or doing whatever you do on Christmas, and getting to sit down and just watch all day long of NBA basketball is pretty fun. I know that the NFL is trying to make it their own holiday with, games on Christmas, but I still think NBA Christmas is really the king on Christmas Day. So that's number three. Number two is a day that oftentimes there are multiple things going on. This is kind of might be more of a nostalgic pick for me, but I think New Year's Day is always great. You get the college football. In the past, you've gotten the Winter Classic. Now, I know everybody's got their opinions on the Winter Classic. And, whether it's It happens, or like at this point, it's kind of not as much of a bigger deal, but I think, kind of in the mid-2010s when it was more of a novelty, that always was something I look forward to, switching between those games or that game and then the college football games. But, typically there's always some good college games on New Year's Day, the Rose Bowl typically. Sugar Bowl late at night, obviously. I had watched the Peach Bowl on New Year's Day this year. I think that's always a great day with college football. And then number one, this is kind of pretty clear. And I would say Thanksgiving, and maybe, to be a little bit more specific, the weekend around Thanksgiving, because, obviously you get the NFL football, you get the NFL football on Thanksgiving, but you also have events on Black Friday. There's usually hockey. There's oftentimes NBA basketball. There's college basketball with the tournaments, and then there's college football with like rivalry games. So it's like all kinds of sports that weekend. So I think that that's pretty easy. Thanksgiving, maybe Black Friday, and maybe include the weekend. But I think that's usually the best part of the sports calendar, where there's like every single sport that's going on, except for baseball. So definitely a exciting day on the sports calendar. I know that there might be days, I think, in April and the spring, where all major sports are going on at the same time. But I think Thanksgiving is probably number one. Some honorable mentions. Day one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I always feel like those days are great because oftentimes you'll get good games. Sometimes with the NBA, those matchups in the first round are not always great. So I feel like, hockey, you kind of, don't know what to expect. So I would say day one of that. I also think, kind of a local niche category here, but the Bean Pot, I think first round of the Bean Pot is always fun to watch. Really enjoy that. The weekend of the Masters is also really cool. And then one last one, the College Lacrosse Championship weekend that takes place on Memorial Day, always will, without fail, watch those games. So really enjoy that weekend as well. So I think that was a pretty good top five, some good honorable mentions. If you're listening to this and you have more honorable mentions that you want to mention, definitely reach out to me, comment on the podcast. You can also comment on Spotify as well. If you're listening on Spotify, they allow you to make comments now, so you can do that as well. But yeah, thanks for listening this week, and we'll hopefully be back later this week with Guest Friday. Kind of not sure about that, but we hope to be putting something out this week. But updates will be coming on the social pages, so look out for those. And have a great week.